This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 23. Today's guest is Mr. Mark Nathan, author of the new book, Delusion of Passion, Why Millennials Struggle to Find Success.
This is Squadron Leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters, not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you, too, can do the work you're meant to do. Today's hosts are Layla Ramadian and myself, JC Preston. We're part of the crew at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people do passion-filled work, and more importantly, giving them the resources and community they need to help share it with others. Today's episode is powered by HostGator. You know, everyone needs a website to get their name out there, especially us creators. I mean, you got to have a centralized hub that your audience can actually go to check out everything that you're all about. And HostGator actually has you covered with their one-button WordPress install. You know, they also have my favorite service called Optimize WordPress, which means that it will back up all of your files automatically, and anyone that has ever lost a website, show of hands, mine's up, will understand that if you don't back up, you run a huge risk of honestly just losing all the work that you've ever done. That's a bad thing. So it's really amazing that they automatically do that for you. They also update your files when they realize that some little teenager was hacking into it and suddenly there's all kinds of weird stuff on your website and they're using it for some kind of weird credit card scam or something. Who knows what they're doing? But the thing is that they'll actually update it for you. So that's pretty cool. So they do the backups, they do the updates, and they just cure out, just make sure that your site is secure as can be. So go check out HostGator. And if you go to newinceptions.com/HostGator, you can get 20% off your next web hosting order. So ladies and gentlemen, this is session number 23 coming at you. How are you guys doing today? I hope you all had a great Valentine's Day or Singles Awareness Day, whichever you want to call it. And those of you guys who were Singles Awareness people, I hope that you had the opportunity to listen to session 22 with Mike. Personally, Maria and I had a very unstressed weekend for once this semester. She withdrew from a class that was eating up the entire weekend. And yeah, we were actually able to catch up on some of the training videos that we wanted to go through in order to help us speak better. And I don't know if you guys have noticed a little bit, but I kind of am improving in my quality of speaking and engaging with you guys on here. So speaking of speaking, one of the most inspirational speakers I've ever met is joining us in this particular session today. When I first got into the entrepreneurship world, he made a really big impact in the way that I started seeing things. And his previous life as a theater student at Loyola, he had a lot of things going on for him. In fact, he had the opportunity to start a film festival and was even had his own agent and was potentially looking at a whole bunch of different options, including a spinoff for a relatively popular sitcom series, which we'll talk about in the show. However, at the time, he then realized that life was going to be bringing more stress into his life. And frankly, if he'd gone that direction with, you know, doing the whole actor sort of thing, it would just go out of control and really wasn't the path that he wanted to go down. So, you know, he started looking at other options and ended up finding a path / mountain he could climb to lead himself to financial freedom. So you know, he eventually got there. He eventually got financially free in his late 20s. And today, he actually helps startups around the Chicago area get up and running themselves. And some of you, especially friends of mine, will recognize this guy as Mark Nathan. And in fact, Mark just recently released a book called The Delusion of Passion. And during our talk today, we'll get into that a little, what he learned on his way to being financially free, what he and his wife, Meredith, do with their financial freedom, and how he has embraced the good and bad to get where he's at. So if you have any questions for Mark, Layla, or myself, feel free to leave a message in the comments via the show notes at newinceptions.com/session23. Or email us at heyguys@newinceptions.com. And, of course, I'll be back after the conversation to fill anything we might have missed. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. It's me, JC, and I'm here today with Layla. And we're actually talking with someone that I think is definitely going to impact you guys, because he's made a big impact in my life. And you know, I really, really think you guys are going to get a lot about today's talk. But really, I mean, it's a long time coming. Yeah, just overly excited, as you can tell. So, yeah, we're actually talking with the multi-talented Mr. Mark Nathan.
Hey, JC. Hey, Layla. How are you guys?
Hey.
Doing great.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, pleasure having you on. So, Mark, you were born back in 1982, so that makes you actually my age as well. And your parents were immigrants. And what's interesting is that you paid your way through college at Loyola, and as being an actor, right?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was chaotic and horrible sometimes. You're never sure where the next meal is coming from, but yeah, I paid my living expenses and rent and all those kinds of things through acting. So it was a lot of fun.
Loyola is a private school, right?
Yep, it's a private school, and so with some scholarships and then small mountain of student loans, take care of tuition, and then paid my living expenses the last handful of years as an actor. So that was a lot of fun. Any things that were related to the acting world, so theater, industrials, commercials, independent film, starting summer camps, things like that, after school drama club. So that kind of stuff, the things that lived in that world.
Right. And you started a film festival, which we'll get later to at 21 out of that. So
yeah, it was a great time. It was a great time.
Cool.
A lot of cool opportunities.
And then we met through the direct sales business that you've actually turned into $1 million+ empire. And quote unquote,
yes.
Right. And that, which has actually allowed you to retire from the corporate world back in, what year was that?
2009. So
wow,
that started in the corporate world right after college. So I did sales and I was an executive recruiter in accounting and finance and IT for about 5.5 years. And so on the side of that, I was building my direct sales business, and it continued to grow and was some very solid side income for a while. And then it was as much as my day income. And then it was multiple times over my day income. And so I personally wanted freedom. There's so much to do.
Right.
There's a lot of things to do in life. My personal mission is to try and fit 3 lifetimes into 1. And when I was just reverse engineering that, okay, well, how do I cram all the things that I want to do into 1 lifetime? If I'm just stacking it up and being real about it, most people spend a majority of their time at work and getting a paycheck and chasing that. And obviously, you got to take care of your family in some way, shape, or form. So I figured if I could get the money thing figured out early on in life, then it's going to open up a lot more possibilities. It'll buy a lot of my time back. And so we worked really hard. And on the side of that, it you know, was much past the day income, and it was an ongoing source of income. So I was able to leave my job at 27. It was 2009.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. I mean, I know the people that have been, you know, long-term entrepreneurs, and they're married to their job. And it's just, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think we'll probably get to in a little bit here is that when you're doing, you know, direct sales, or other people might know it as MLM or whatever. I mean, it's one of the truly, truly passive streams of income when it comes right down to it, because I mean, you build a group and structure and do the sales and all that sort of stuff. And I mean, really, I can't be more positive about it. So anyway,
well, I think most people don't even really understand how much of a real business it is. And it's unbelievable. The goal of any business is to continue to move more products. You know, products right. are just money is made. That's every business on the planet.
Right.
But in any business, it's an issue of scaling, right? Mm-hmm. How do you scale so that it can be bigger than you? Because if it's always just tied into you, it's going to have some limits. And I learned that actually from the film festival. We launched it and got off to a great start. And in 90 days from the time it was an idea in our head. Mm-hmm. To the time it was actually happening, it was about 90 days, and we had 7 universities participating. It was the Chicago Collegiate Film Festival, so it took the top student films from the different major universities in Chicago and kind of pitted them against each other in a battle royale for dominance and, you know, and supreme domination. But but as we were doing that, you know, 7 universities, and I think we had something over 50 film submissions, there were a few hundred people in attendance, and we did that in about 90 days.
Wow.
And so it was very exciting, and that was before Facebook. So Facebook was being invented while that was happening. Mm-hmm. In 2003. So it wasn't a resource that we were able to use to market and all these kinds of things. But it was a very successful first year. And we had a lot of people helping out. I think we had probably about 30 to 35 people that I knew that were helping to volunteer or coordinate or whatever. But it was still pretty much all on me. And so the next year, when I just didn't have as much time to dedicate to it, mm-hmm. but still wanted to grow it, I didn't scale it in a way that was bigger than me. And that's what I think direct sales does, is it gives you an opportunity to scale a business like you would need to scale any business.
Oh yeah.
But doing it in a way that truly does create, you know, ongoing income.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, even if you're going to get even like a business like this, for example, where, you know, you're a professional blogger or something like that. And there's a guy by the name of Steve Camp, and he started back in 2008 or so, a website called Nerd Fitness. And he was just talking about on a podcast that I was listening to that he's hired 9 people that are in charge of making sure just the blog and, you know, everything gets done so that he can, you know, enjoy some time away. Otherwise, sure. You know, otherwise he does become that solopreneur. So,
yeah. If you don't find a way to scale, you end up being a little bit of a slave to what you've created.
Right. And, so
any business.
Yeah, definitely. So how's life? I mean, where are you at? Are you sitting on a beach somewhere today, or where you?
Today I'm downtown Chicago making some things happen. So one of the things we've been able to do with our freedom is enjoy a little bit of time. Got a chance to spend all sorts of time with my wife. We had got married the previous year before I left my corporate job. So spent a lot of time traveling, all that kind of stuff, but it's been cool being able to use your freedom to just do other things. And so we've gotten a chance to help a couple other small startups get off the ground and help with that. So right now I'm just getting wrapped up. We're helping one of the companies that I'm working with, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. Freedom right. opens up a lot of doors and a lot of opportunities for sure.
And what's Meredith been doing with her well-deserved time? Anything cool?
Meredith has been busy being amazing and awesome. I'm married to the coolest chick on the planet. She's amazing. She's
that's awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing. Layla, for real. She's unbelievable. But she has been So she worked at a a holistic fertility center that works with women as they're going through different stages of their fertility journey and their pregnancy journey. Either maybe they're doing IVF or different, you know, assisted reproductive things. Mm-hmm. And so they are the holistic counterpart to that. So acupuncture, massage therapy, things like that. So she developed over the years actually a massage protocol. So she's a massage therapist. She's director of massage therapy over there and created a massage protocol that actually helps women get pregnant and, you know, detox, uterine lining, you know, all these kinds of things.
Wow.
As a guy, I'm like, that's, you women are amazing. Awesome. Congratulations. That's a lot of stuff to figure out, but it's been super successful. She is probably one of two or three people in the entire country, in the massage world that is as knowledgeable in the fertility space as she is. And so she has been training some new therapists in that protocol and all those types of things. So same thing. She's been enjoying her freedom, but freedom allows you to do the things that you're really excited about and gives you the time and the money to be able to do it. So we've been keeping ourselves busy. We didn't leave our job so we can sit around and eat bonbons and watch movie for the rest of our life. You know, we got out of our job so we could dominate the world faster.
Right. Of course. I mean, that's how it works. Speaking of which, and keeping busy, one of the things I just saw on Facebook was that you guys were all featured. You're on the Family Feud. I mean, it's a game show, right? So, like, how was that, and where'd the idea come from and getting involved with that? Because obviously you're busy with a whole bunch of other stuff, and where'd the time come and do that, and how that will work out?
Oh, well, it was a great experience. The Family Feud people have created a phenomenal environment, and quite honestly, I would recommend anyone that is close with their family or anything like that. It's a really fantastic family experience. It really is. Even if it was just the audition once upon a time, it was fun. It was a fun little memory, and it was cool and brings people together. And it was a riot. It was a riot. But we would watch Family Feud every once in a while. We'd go visit the parents and have family dinners and all this kind of stuff. And my dad is the type that constantly just has the TV on in the background for no good reason. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even matter. So we would just switch it to things that were a little bit more entertaining and less depressing than CNN and the world blowing itself up every 3 seconds. So we would have Family Feud on every once in a while, and you're yelling at the TV and participating and all these kinds of things. And we've talked about it. We should be on Family Feud. This is great. There's five of us kids. There's the me and my brother and my sister. And then my sister is married, and then I'm married. So that with my priest brother. Who's a Roman Catholic priest. There's five of us. So we always thought it would be amusing. We kept talking about it, and we were actually going to send in an audition tape or whatever needed to happen. But then actually on one of the episodes, they said, oh, we're auditioning, so on and so forth. Send us an email. So we sent them an email. They were coming through Chicago for auditions. We auditioned. There was a callback. Then they sent us some emails and correspondence, figured out filming dates. We thought we didn't have a shot, actually. They gave us like 4 months of filming dates, and we were only able to make like 10 of them because my brother-in-law had just gotten into the Fire Academy, so he couldn't miss that. So it was about 10 days that we were available for filming, but they made it happen, and they made it work. And so it was, I think we initially sent in that email maybe November of 2014. Mm-hmm. And by the time we were actually in Atlanta, they flew us down there, and they're super classy. It was maybe July or August of 2015. So it was there. I mean, we weren't holding our breath. You know, it's not like we were just sitting around waiting for an email.
Right.
Really active, but it was just a great family trip. When it was all said and done, it was a great family trip. My brother, who's the Roman Catholic priest, actually is a dancer, and he break dances. And so Steve Harvey had a great time with that. It's actually currently right now going viral as we speak. It's been up for less than 24 hours and has been shared like 8,000 times on Facebook. And
wow,
it's a riot. That's really funny.
That's cool. I'll be sure to get that in the show notes.
Father, absolutely.
Yeah.
Laying it down.
So your background is actually in theater, film. And as we were just talking at the top of the show, you're pretty accomplished there. How did you get your entrepreneurial bug? I mean, where did the idea for the film festival initially come from?
Well, that's a great question. I I think as an actor and anyone that's in the arts, if they're really going to make it, they have to develop that entrepreneurial spirit. So many people get into the arts because they have talent or they're passionate about music or passionate about theater or passionate about film or whatever. And you obviously have to delve in and develop your talents and develop your craft. But to deny the fact that there's a business component to all of it is just silly. It's a business. And so understanding how to run yourself, I mean, as an actor, I mean, you're your product. So really running yourself as a business was pretty huge. And I was decently talented, I would say. I was okay. But I think what I understood faster than most was that it was a business and that there's a certain amount of things that need to happen. I mean, you just need to send out your resume and you need to send out your headshot and just audition all the time and just work the numbers. And in any business, that's what you're doing. You're just getting yourself out there and working the numbers and trying to find a target audience and all these types of things. And so when I really started running it like a business, I was booked constantly. In the 5 years that I was going after my craft, from the time I was a freshman in college through the first, you know, probably year after I was out of school, there was 5 days in 4 years that I wasn't in a show, rehearsing for a show, producing a film, doing something that was getting done. Mm-hmm. It was 5 days in 4 years. So that's not because I'm the most talented human being in the world. I kind of understood it as a business. So when it got time to submit the short film that we did to film festivals, I was just looking at these student film festivals and they just had these horrible websites and they were just so rinky dink. I just thought to myself, after 4 years of developing yourself as an entrepreneur, just thought to myself, well, I don't know who these people are. I don't know why they get to judge me. Mm-hmm. Why can't we just start one of our own? So we just started it and we just put one foot in front of the other and here's what needs to happen and put together to-do lists and just execute it every day. And 90 days, we made a lot of stuff happen. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And it turned out really well. The film festival turned out really well. That short film we did got some decent exposure, and a decade plus later, it was a really solid accomplishment for, at that point, 19 years old and working on a shoestring budget.
Right. Like, yeah, that brings up another question that kind of related to that. And I want to get a little bit of a clarification, because back in that time, again, this is a story that I remember from you, but this is kind of related, but not. The film festival, but maybe it kind of helped you get noticed.
I love unrelated things.
Well, okay, so if memory serves me right, you somehow got an audition for the spinoff of Friends. Do I remember that correctly, or am I just...
No, it's generally accurate. So after Friends was winding down, everyone was interested in, well, what are the Friends going to do next? What are all these guys going to do next? And mm-hmm. there was one of the Friends is from Chicago mm-hmm. and has a solid theater background and knows the city very well. They were already starting to talk about their next show and a pilot that they were producing and all this kind of thing. And I got a call from my agent at the time that was very exciting and very encouraging. It was for a recurring role on this, you know, on this series, right, and they wanted me to audition. And so it wasn't a slam dunk by any means, but they told me that there was a handful of people. It was a pretty short list that they wanted to audition for this role, and he knew both the other guys that they were bringing in. And
right,
you got this. It's all you. But just the timing in my life wasn't fantastic to be able to go to. To be able to go to California and drop all the things that I was starting, mm-hmm. Leaving my family just wasn't in a financial spot where I just wanted to be able to help out, and right. being across the country and continuing to take care of myself, but not really be able to add value to anyone else. Mm-hmm. It was okay for a while, but yeah, if you don't take care of your family, who will, you know? So I decided to pass on that opportunity. People thought I was crazy. The people that knew that I had that shot, they thought I was crazy.
Well, and in retrospect, the show didn't go anywhere either. So, I mean,
yeah, as it turns out, the show didn't even get picked up, and I would have moved myself and left all the things that I had started and all this kind of thing. And that's where, you know, people, they chase a lot of things that are that sound good at the time, but, you know, is this decision good? Is this decision bad? Well, I mean, decisions have to be attached to a dream. And if your decisions are attached to a dream and attached to goals, then that's the litmus test you kind of run it by. Is this a good decision or a bad decision? Well, does it help you get closer to your dreams or closer to your goals, or does it not? And that's what makes it a good or bad decision. And where I was at my goals at the time, it would have taken me away from my goals at the time. Mm-hmm. And so it was a pretty simple decision, actually. But and in retrospect, it turned out to be the right one for sure.
Right, right. Well, it was always kind of an interesting story to me. So cool.
Well, that's very interesting, Mark. In your bio, it says that you built $1 million+ direct sales online retail business. What are your general thoughts on direct sales? Because I am currently a Beachbody coach. However, I'm trying to separate myself a little bit and be a little different than just a quote unquote Beachbody coach. And I have a lot of ideas, but in general, what are your thoughts on direct sales since you've built yourself, you know, $1 million retail business?
Yeah, I think direct sales is it's unbelievable. It is the best way to, in my opinion, create financial stability and financial freedom for yourself. And I think it's a little bit of a different business model than most people understand, especially when you grow up with go to school, get a good education, get a good job. And when we live in the age of the startup where, you know, you got to have this idea and it's got to be truly unique and original and you got to find investors and all these types of things. And you got this kind of startup venture capital environment that is what most people are chasing. It is truly a business that is able to be scaled and grow in a way that you can walk away from it. And it is truly a business. All of the I've helped start a handful of businesses at this point, the film festival, other things, and you are going to deal with the exact same issues that you deal with as you are building a direct sales business. And so where in a traditional business, you're going to have to come up with anywhere tens of thousands of dollars and hundreds of thousands of dollars. One of the companies that I'm working pretty closely with, helping them get off the ground and expand over here from China. I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars in and just getting to the point where we can start making money. So that's what a traditional business entails. And you're going to have to learn all of the same things that you do in a direct sales business when you treat it like a real business. And I think that's what most people, where the disconnect comes for most people, because you can build a direct sales business on the side of a day job or whatever. People treat it like it's kind of a throwaway. It's a hobby. It's a, you know, whenever I get to it, I'll get to it. But if you actually treated it like a business, How do I market myself? What differentiates myself? Like you're talking about, Layla, what differentiates myself from other things that are out there, other products that are out there, other organizations that are out there? What is your unique value that you are bringing to the table? What's your philosophy on how you're building your business? All of these things are the exact same lessons you're going to learn building any business. And so I think one thing that worked really well for us was that we never treated this like a hobby. It was, even though it was a part-time effort, it was something that we mentally put 100% into when we were doing it, right? A lot of people have this mindset of, well, if I can't put 100% into it, I'm not going to do it. Well, that's personally, quite honestly, I think that's a bunch of garbage because you're not putting 100% into anything. I mean, if you're putting out, it means you're putting 24 hours a day into it. So that just doesn't even, that's not even logical. So what I think they're trying to say is that I want to be able to put everything I got behind it. And I think you can, you just have to do it in chunks, right? So everywhere I am, that's where I am. And so when I'm doing something, I'm giving it everything that I got at the time. If I'm putting 5-10 hours a week into something, well, that's only a percentage of my life, but that doesn't mean I should just put, when I'm doing it, oh, if it's 10% of the time that I'm spending in a week, well, I'm not going to give it a 10% effort. Yes, my time is only a 10% effort that I'm putting into it, but while I'm doing it, I'm going to give it 100%. And so even though we were putting whatever, 5, 10, 15, 20 hours a week into our side business, we never treated it like a side business. We gave it 100% while we were doing it. And it turned out fairly well.
You know, you make a really good point about giving it your all. I mean, people who do sales on the side, you know, doing all these other multi-level marketing businesses on the side, I really believe that either you go big or go home. I mean, and anything that you want to build, anything that you want to build, you really need to go big or go home. I think I actually did try to do multi-level marketing while I was working in the corporate world, and it was so much fun. And then that came that question of, oh, I like to do this more than my real job. And then that's when I decided, you know what, I can't do half of something and 100% of something else. I need to do 100% of this and get really good at it so that doesn't look like I'm a flake. I think brand creation, identity, and putting a full-time effort in something is what really will make the ball rolling. And like you said, you know, when you do put in a certain percentage of things, it's more of giving it your all versus, oh, I only have 10 hours a day. But really, you're putting 100% in that 10 hours that most people who do work in the corporate world don't really put 10 hours in, even though they're there for 40 hours a week.
Oh, yeah. It's the same thing with working out. I mean, there's plenty of people, mm-hmm. they're at the gym for 2 hours, but the amount of productivity that's happening in those 2 hours is 20 minutes, 30 minutes, if we're just keeping it real. But everyone's had those experiences where you've been at the gym way longer than you wanted to and didn't get a whole lot done, or there's just either I don't have the time to do that today. So you just get in there, you crank it out, it's a fantastic workout, and you leave. And it's the same thing with anything. I think so many people have just gotten into this pattern of, well, I'll just show up and I'll kind of get by, and what do I need to do? And that's the game, right? That's what people do in school. They figure out, well, what's the path of least resistance? What do I have to do with this professor to get the best grade possible? Okay, well, as long as I pay attention in class, but you know, I don't really need to do all the extra reading. He covers kind of everything in class. Well, then you don't do the reading. You know, like you just find people naturally default to finding the path of least resistance, and it's a habit and it's a mindset that people get out of.
Unfortunately, though, as an engineer, I gotta say that we just call that being efficient. But.
Yes. Understood.
And yes, I'm we're both
guilty of it too.
Well, I mean, we both got our backgrounds in engineering.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's nothing wrong with being efficient, but there's when you cross the line into efficient versus avoiding things that need to get done, efficient versus, you know, well, now in the pursuit of efficiency, well, I'm only going to do it if it's efficient or whatever. You know, you just. Mm-hmm. You just gotta get things done. I mean, there's only so many hours that you get, and if people just kind of waste them away, you don't get as much done. And then you string enough of those days, enough of those weeks together, yeah, you're a couple years out, and you're like, wow, I haven't taken as much ground as I wanted to. Well, you didn't give it everything you had.
I don't know what to tell you.
There were lots of people when I was wrapping up college. By the time I was done with school, I had done more professional shows outside of school than I did shows in school. And when I was graduating, people and my, you know, fellow actors or whatever would see my resume, they would just be like, how did you do that? What were you doing? Well, while you were busy partying, I was auditioning. I don't know what to tell you. You string enough of those weeks together, it turns into a couple good years. So. Absolutely. Being focused is everything.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, reflecting on my previous years, I look back, I'm like, man, I had so much free time when I said I didn't have time. Now I'm like doing power hour trainings. I'm doing, taking advantage of my, you know, 1 hour break that I have. It's just, it's amazing how efficient you can be with your time, how you can delegate time. to have the life that you really deserve. I mean, you had a really good video I saw about the people that you're referring to of freedom, and I remember seeing one section of your banner, of the banners that were on the wall in the school you're in or the stadium. It looked like it was a gym, but it said on this one banner that you were talking about somebody, freedom isn't really freedom. And I can totally relate to that. So how do you think you personally did so well in your business? And what are the three tips you might suggest to others who want to start their own direct sales business?
That's a really good question. I think probably the number one thing that I would tell people is have some really good mentorship. It's a different business. It's a different beast. Every business is a different beast. Anytime that you're switching into a new realm, you need to learn from some people that have been down that road before. When I was starting that film festival, one of the things that was important to me and one of the first things on our to-do list, as it were, was to reach out to a couple of the larger film festivals here in Chicago and see if I can just get on the phone with the festival director and chat with them a little bit. And ended up chatting with a gal named Helen, who is the festival director of the Chicago International Film Festival, which is one of the biggest, and it was just the biggest one in the city. It's one of the biggest ones in the U.S. And she gave me all sorts of time, and she was great. She was wonderful. And she had me into her office and got a chance to bounce some questions off her, but it was a new pursuit. And so I needed to learn, how do I win in this game? I think people come to the table with talents and abilities and things you've learned from your other endeavors. And it's not that those things aren't transferable, but it's the intangibles that you learned while you were doing those things that are transferable. So you've got to learn the new game. You've got to learn how to operate. You've got to learn how to be effective and productive in this new game that you're in. But how do you translate the intangibles you already bring to the table so that you can win as fast as possible? So probably mentorship is number one. Number two is what we were talking about just a little bit earlier ago, was don't think about it like it's just a side thing. I mean, if it can really get you where you want to go, it's a side business in terms of how many hours a week that you can put into it, give it everything you got. I mean, even if it's 5-10 productive hours a week, man, go after it, because there is so much that can happen. Again, in it's a different mindset. So people are like, well, how productive can I really be if I only have 5 hours a week to put into it, 10 hours a week to put into it? But I always think about it like, well, it's the same thing. You know, it's the same difference between spending an hour in a Ferrari versus spending an hour on a tricycle. I mean, it's still an hour of your time, but you can get a lot more done. An hour in a Ferrari, you can get a lot further than an hour on a tricycle. And that's, in my opinion, what direct sales allows people to do, is create a vehicle that can get so big and so huge. It doesn't start out like that immediately. It's something that you got to work and build towards. But that's how I saw the time I was putting into it. It wasn't 5 hours a week. It wasn't 10 hours a week. Well, it was 5 or 10 hours a week I was putting into something that could potentially be a Ferrari. And so I just needed to build it up towards that. So even if you only have a little bit of time to put into it on a weekly basis, give it everything you got. Let your mentor guide you on what's productive and what's not. Along the way, you're going to learn how to do it for yourself and stand on your own 2 feet in this business. But that's probably what your mentor wants for you. They want you to take all the things you bring to the table and be dangerous and be awesome at it. And probably the last thing is just don't look at the results too soon, right? A lot of people, after a handful of weeks, handful of months, quite honestly, a handful of days, they try it. They give it a shot. Like, well, I don't know. It's not producing like I'd want. Well, nothing produces that fast. It's just not what's going to happen. It's fun talking to people that they have been working for a handful of years, and they get into a direct sales business. They start doing it for 5 days. They've been working at their job for 5 years. They get in the business for 5 days, and they start talking, well, it's not producing the results I want. Well, how long have you been working at your job? Well, 5 years. Is that producing the results you want? Well, not really. Well, then relax. It's okay. That's fine. Just give us give it a second.
Well, and you know, I think that you can kind of look at that like building a skyscraper too. I mean, it's like, if you're going to build this thing to a certain size, you got to give yourself some time to actually put the foundation in. Maybe there's some things that you got to personally work on yourself so that, you know, you can add value to others or whatever to be able to actually build
Absolutely.
Your building.
Yeah, and laying that foundation is huge. So I think just giving it a time, giving it a second. Again, most people, as they're building any business, there's going to be some people that are excited for you and some people that are, you know, where are you? I'm not seeing you as much. Well, I'm building a business. I mean, that's the same thing it would be in any business. And so really just being patient with mm-hmm. yourself, being patient with the process, everything's going to work out. It's one of the best vehicles on the planet to create financial freedom.
I just wrote everything down that you just said about your advice. That is so helpful. Thank you. I'm going to definitely use it because like we mentioned, having a good mentor is so crucial in keeping yourself motivated and accountable and not thinking of it as a side thing. And because if it's a side thing, you're just going to put it aside again and put it in the back burner and don't be discouraged. I mean, one person told me that whatever you work on, just try to see the results of what you put in 3 months from that day or give yourself 5 years. This is a slow process. If it was so fast and so easy, then everyone would quit their job and be an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. It's easy enough for anyone to do, but it's hard enough to keep it away from the people that are lazy, in my opinion. It's just hard enough to weed out the lazy people.
You know, there's a book I'm reading called Entrepreneurship by Dave Ramsey, and it's his definition of, you know, being an entrepreneur and a leader is the process of leading and causing a venture to prosper. And so what I find so inspiring from what you said is that, you know, just trying to just not be normal, do something extraordinary.
Yeah. And there's going to be a point in anyone's life where you just, when you're growing up and in college and shortly thereafter, you know, you're going to have times where you and your friends are just not on the same page. You know, you're doing different things. There's different things that you're excited about. There's different things that you're focused on. And then you fast forward 10 years later, well, they've moved to a different part of the country. They've, you know, got a family. They're all these kinds of things. And it's not like other people are waiting to make decisions on their life to get your buy-in or get your approval. But so many times people make decisions based on, well, what are my friends going to think? You know, what are they going to be on board? Are they going to get it? Are they going to be excited? Well, not everyone you know does what you do for work. And not everyone you know has the same hobbies you do, but you still find a way to be friends. It's okay. But I think there's a lot of waiting that people do because it's almost like they're waiting for everyone else to get on board. And what I found is if you just tell people, here's where I'm going and here's what I'm doing, and here's what I'm excited about, they're generally supportive. They're excited about what you're doing.
Well said, Mark. Now on the topic about being financially free, what does it really mean to you? And what have you been able to do with it? We briefly talked about it, but I would like to kind of, you know, ask you, what does financial freedom mean to you?
Financial freedom is the best thing on the planet, first and foremost. I highly recommend it. It's kind of amazing and it's awesome. But it's really just being able to make more and more of your decisions based on what's important to you versus based on what you're able to do because of your financial situation. I mean, I personally like to think that I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about money, right? If someone were to ask you how much of your time do you actually spend thinking about money? How many of your decisions revolve around money? Personally, what I'd like to be able to say is zero. You know, zero. Money is just not that important to me. I'm not a money is everything kind of person. So I'd like to be able to say 0% of my decisions revolve around money and all of my decisions revolve around the things that are important to me and the things that I'm passionate about and the things that I want to pursue and the people that are important, all of these kinds of things. But the reality of the situation is that if you're just looking at everything from the time that most people are waking up to the time that they're, you know, what they're doing with their day and who are they spending their day with and where are they spending, you know, their free time and when do they come home and what home do they come home to and what are they doing when they're not at their work and what are they able to do with the people that are important to them. A lot of those things are really dictated around what they're doing for money. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing to pursue that paycheck and take care of their bills and take care of their family. And so to me, financial freedom isn't a certain amount of money. It's not a certain age, obviously. It's the ability to just make more and more of your decisions based around what's important to you and the things that you're excited about and the things you want your life to be about. And when you have enough financial stability, enough financial wherewithal, whether it's, you know, enough ongoing income or we just have enough money, you know, piled away or saved up or whatever it is. But for us, it was having enough ongoing income where we could take care of our bills, take care of our life, take care of everything, be comfortable. But what it does is it bought back 40, 50, when you include commuting and all this kind of stuff, 60 plus hours a week that I was spending going to get a paycheck to take care of all the life stuff. Well, now I just bought back 50 to 60 hours of my life. And that is what's exciting to me because what I'm doing with my freedom, I've got a lot of artistic ambitions. I've got a lot of entrepreneurial ambitions. I've got, there's lots of things that I want to do. Right now, we're kind of we're taking our direct sales business to a different level right now, which is exciting. I've got a lot of entrepreneurial spirit. So that's where working with some of these other smaller startups has come from. We've gotten a chance to write a book. And so just our first book is coming out. My friend and I co-authored a success book for millennial generation. And for us, for our people, because it's exciting to us. After this phase is done in the next handful of years, going to get back into the art world and get back into directing and producing some film. Probably do that for a handful of years. And I'm excited about taking a small chunk of our life and going into politics to help hopefully straighten out some things there. But I don't want to be a career politician because I don't think career politicians are, not to get super political, but when you can create policy that you don't have to live in, I think that's part of what's created this political mess on both sides. I think both sides are completely out of control because you can just lock yourself up in Washington, D.C. and then create legislation for people. And then you never have to go live in it. You know, you've got your own little bubble. Mm-hmm. And so once upon a time, politics used to be a way to serve your community and serve your state, serve your country by being in politics and representing your community. And then you'd have to go back and live in what you just created. And so I'm excited about doing that for a chunk of our life a little bit later on. So between the arts and the entrepreneurship and the politics, I mean, there's a lot of things we're trying to do. But I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't buy my time back. And uniquely, there's that story is unique to me. But even my wife, what she's doing with her financial freedom and what other people listening to this are going to do with your financial freedom. I mean, there's kind of a unique combination of skills and talents and a way that you see the world that you need to unleash. They're just you owe it to the world to unleash yourself and really see what you can leave behind. And I think it would be a travesty. I think it's a travesty that most people spend all their time just chasing around money and not really pursuing the things that are exciting to them. Because then the world is less. The world is less because you haven't become everything that you were supposed to be.
Could you say that again? You said that people are chasing around what again? I didn't quite follow that part.
Chasing around either a paycheck, just chasing around a paycheck. They're just paying their bills and trying to get a little bit ahead so maybe they can retire one day. But really being able to develop their talents and abilities and skills and passions. That's I think you owe it to the world. You owe it to the world.
I like how you said that. Thank you so much, Mark. That's really well said.
So coming back down to earth here real quick, you were talking about the fact that you were, and I'm not saying that was crazy talk. It's not. I mean, it's totally relevant to what we're trying to accomplish with New Inceptions. But kind of let's just go back to what we were saying with the book,
yeah,
which is called The Delusion of Passion. For one, I didn't know that was a book that you were co-authoring and with a guy by the name of David Anderson.
Yep.
First of all, how did you connect with him, and what was that process like of doing a co-authorship sort of situation?
Yeah, David's a great guy. We've known each other for probably 11 years. We were introduced by a mutual friend back when I was 21. He was 19, and he was just starting to want to get into the world of entrepreneurship and kind of think outside of the box a little bit. At the time, he was going through a lot. His mom was diagnosed schizophrenic, and he had two younger siblings that he was trying to be a good example for and get through middle school and all those kinds of things. And so he had a lot on his plate for a 19-year-old. And so what that relationship looked like at the time was just being there for him. You know, just got him around some of my buddies, some of my friends, and invite him out to football and just love on him a little bit, give him some books, give him some leadership audios that could be encouraging to him, give him some ride homes every once in a while, things like that. And so it was the beginning of a great developing friendship over the next decade. As we were going through our 20s, he took a very different path than I did. I kept going down the entrepreneurship path and arts and entrepreneurship and those types of things. He went down the finance route. He was at Goldman Sachs on Wall Street, and then he was an intern and aide at the White House. And then he worked in wealth management again over here in Chicago. He started his own traditional business in student loan servicing called School Loan 411. He helped people with their student loan debt and taking advantage of some of the programs that are out there and reducing loans and these kinds of things. He helped my kid sister actually save like 17 grand on her student loans. So it was a great business, and he was building that. And so over that time frame, we saw a lot of different things. We both succeeded at a decent level in the different things that we were doing. And we just saw a lot of really interesting, saw and heard a lot of interesting things from our own peers and from guys that were our age, maybe a little bit younger. We're at the front end of the millennial generation. And so we've just gotten a chance to go through our 20s with the mindsets that we had and that everyone has heard. Things like, you know, if it's not something you're passionate about, or, you know, if then don't do it. If it's not something that, you know, if you're passionate about something, you know, the world's just going to kind of open up for you and all these kinds of things. And there's the interesting thing is that there's truth behind all of those statements, which is why they're dangerous, because there's a certain amount of truth to them, but there's a certain amount of assumptions that happen from those right. statements, and it leads people down interesting paths. So actually, the delusion of passion, why millennials struggle to find success, that's the title of the book. But the book is not against living a life of passion. That's not what the book is at all. The book is actually very much in favor of living a life of passion, but it's not something just you find, right?
Being smart about it.
What's that?
Being smart about it.
Yeah, well, it's not something that you find. It's not like an Easter egg hunt, you know? It's not like waiting behind the corner. Right? It's not not hidden behind, you know, some job title. Well, if I just had the perfect job, or if I was in the perfect industry, or I had the perfect career, or if something were different, then I'd be excited. No, that's not it. Like, you don't find a life you're passionate about. You create a life you're passionate about, and you take it one step at a time. And just because you're passionate about something doesn't mean it's not going to be hard. Just because you're passionate about something doesn't mean that it's not going to be, you know, that it's going to be sunshine and lollipops all the time. Just because you're passionate about something doesn't mean you're just going to, you know, float on the wings of passion and nothing's going to come against you. It's going to take some work, and you're going to have to get down and dirty and start making it happen. But creating a life that you're passionate about living is very real. It's very real. And the book, the first half of the book is taking some of these different ideas and quotes that we've all heard and kind of dissecting, well, what's true about it? Why does it resonate so much with us? But here's where, where it's a little bit off. And here's why, if you don't realize where it's a little bit off, you know, here's what you could be setting yourself up for. So clearing up some of these delusions of passion. And then the second half of the book is some practical steps on creating a life that you are excited and passionate about.
Right. One of those delusions that was in the first part of the book is said it's you must be passionate about the process. And in the Army, you know, they learn, I've learned through my wife, Maria, who's, you know, in the National Guard and done that for numerous years. They have a saying that's called embrace the suck.
Yeah.
And you know, I know that anything that is worth doing isn't going to be easy. In fact, I just put in a 10-hour day yesterday for something that should have only taken half the time, if not less. But I had to fiddle with some tech and, you know, just, it's just something that I had to deal with. And, you know, other people that would just drive them completely crazy. What kind of sucky things have you had to embrace while you were becoming financially free? And how are you able to embrace the suck?
Oh, gosh. Man, where's the time? Good Lord. The 7-part podcast series, bro. Yeah, the amount of things that you have to deal with is there's no shortage of things you're going to have to deal with. I mean, personally, a couple of my biggest struggles was that I was just broke. I was financially just broke. My family did not grow up with a whole lot of money. My dad was a doctor. My mom was a nurse, and so that's how we started our childhood. Sometime in the like early mid 90s, my dad was thinking about starting a clinic with some other doctors, and he did, but he didn't really have a whole lot of business sense about him. So he was just trusting that they were taking care of all that stuff. Well, lo and behold, they were doing all sorts of illegal financial billing kind of things that were not fantastic. And so when they got taken down, he got taken down with them. So he lost everything. And we were in sixth grade, seventh grade. And so we went from a doctor and nurse income to just a nurse income. And my parents were still very much prioritizing our education and made sure that we went to good schools. And so there just wasn't money for anything. And I had learned some pretty horrible financial habits. So one of the toughest things for me was, you know, any business takes a little bit of time, it takes a little bit of investment. And so just figuring out how to break a lot of the crappy financial habits that I had, learning to get a little bit more fiscally responsible and just start making some money so I could do that well. I think probably the other major struggle was that, if I'm just being real, I was just selfish. In the acting world, you get very focused on you and what you're trying to accomplish, what's in it for me, so on and so forth.
And well, I think that's just part of being, you know, surviving in that world. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so you know, it was Captain Me Planet all the time. I was, mm-hmm. Everything was about Mark and what Mark needed and what Mark wanted. But when you start getting into the real world and the adult world, well, you know, there's just a lot less tolerance for people that have that kind of attitude. And really, when you make money in this world, you make money by helping people solve their problems. And when I would constantly approach pretty much anything with the agenda of like, okay, this is what's best for me, or, you know, focused on myself versus, well, if you just focus on other people's, helping other people and solving their problems, everything gets a lot easier. And so that mindset shift for me was pretty difficult because I was very self-focused. But once I started realizing that that's how money works and that's the game, well, now it's about, well, how can I develop myself so I can get better at solving people's problems? And the financial stuff started taking care of itself.
You know, you mentioned something, Mark, about surrounding yourself around amazing people, which is what you had mentioned is having really good mentors. What kind of people would you have been? What kinds of people have you been able to surround yourself with?
That is a fantastic question. I think what most people have, if they're not intentional about surrounding themselves with people that bring out the best in them, what you have are people that think like you. They think like you, they believe like you, they're similar to you, because that's when we're thinking about our friends and how we develop friendships, that's how we grow up. We look for people that have common interests and common, you know, common perspectives, and they like the same movies or they like the same music. And so everything is really built around, well, how are we similar? And you're looking for the similarities. And I think one thing that has been helpful is that I've actually tried to surround myself with people who are different, not different in I guess probably different in productive ways. So people that complement us, you know, we've got the same overall vision for life and what we're trying to accomplish, but we've got complementing skill sets. When we're talking about mentors, a lot of people think a mentor is like a parent who just loves you and encourages you and all of those types of things. And a mentor, quite honestly, is probably going to make you angry as many times as they're going to, you know, get you excited. Now, it doesn't mean that they're, you know, it's an oppressive relationship by any stretch of the imagination, but their goal should be, a mentor's goal should be to see you get better, not to make you feel comfortable. And if you're comfortable, that means you're not doing anything new or you're not pushing yourself. If you're not pushing yourself, you're not growing. And so if a mentor's goal is to help you grow, well, that means that by default, there's going to be some kind of uncomfortability there. They're going to push more from you, expect more from you, demand more from you, help you see yourself and help you see your struggles from a different light and a different perspective that might challenge you. And I've tried as much as possible to continue to embrace that. To this day, we've got mentors that tell me all sorts of things that I don't want to hear, but they're true. And it's things I need to grow on and, you know, grow in areas that I need to grow and things I need to work on. And so mentors, having phenomenal mentors, having phenomenal friendships and partnerships. We talk about in the book, you know, mentors are there to help you become more and partners are there to help you accomplish more. When you have good partners, when you've got complementing partners, you can take some ground. I mean, and in any good team, you've got people that have complementing strengths, right? You've got, not everyone is Michael Jordan, and not everyone, you know, does this, or you know, not everyone can be the center in a basketball team, right? But you've got someone that can rebound really well. You've got someone that can shoot really well. And the goal is for everyone to be able to do everything a little bit, but you want to have people that have complementing strengths. But the challenge is that, you know, if they come to the table with different perspectives and they're equally as good, well, you got to make room for that in your life too. You can't have just surround yourself with a bunch of yes men that just, you know, think that you're the bee's knees, man. You just think that you're the best thing that's ever happened since sliced bread. You need to have some partners and some people you're running with that bring a different perspective, that challenge you appropriately. You know, it's not being rude or, you know, calling you out or whatever, but like they're appropriately, like making sure that you are seeing eye to eye. And the things we've accomplished so far in our life has been, there's always me and someone else. It's always been me and a partner. It's kind of like with Mark Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg, he's like the king of buddy movies, right? Like he's in every movie with everyone else. He's like, the dude hasn't starred in a movie on his own in like forever, in a day. But he's a gajillionaire because he's in every other movie with everyone else. He's like the ultimate like buddy, you know, buddy movie guy. Denzel Washington and Will Ferrell. And he's that guy. He like brings out the best in the other actors, and he's made an entire career of that. And anything we've accomplished, it's because we've had good mentorship and we've had a partner that helps bring out the best in us.
You know, and that is so true, because by having someone that's your partner and that can help you achieve accomplishment is really important. For me, that is a problem. I currently is a problem because I'm looking for people who don't want to just follow me. I'm looking for people who want to lead with me. I call them lifers. And so my next question is, how do you find people that can be, you know, just as amazing as you are and that can help you succeed and create this partnership to accomplish things together? So far, I have followers and I'm trying to build those followers to become partners, but all of them are trying to do this on the side. All of them are wanting to be, you know, just a happy customer. But nobody wants to join me in terms of making something unique out of what I'm doing. And being a better team. And I have partners with people who have motivated me, and I was originally their leader, their follower. And then I decided, you know what? I like what they're doing. I want to do what they're doing. So how do you find potential followers that become one that want to become partners?
Sure. Well, I think that's a great question. You got a lot of them. I think
bam, bam, bam.
Get it. Answer that. I think the short answer is that there has to be room for them in your vision. So when you want to have people that are equally as awesome as you, right? If you've got a big vision, you've got a lot of things you want to do, you want to be a leader. Well, then if your vision for the future is not big enough for two or three or four or five leaders, then they're going to need to find another vision to be a part of. See, they can be a part. You can be part of the same vision with multiple leaders, but there's really only anything with two heads is a monster, right? So if you're both trying to lead the same group or lead the same organization, there's only so much that that's going to be productive. But if you have a bigger vision that is going to require multiple leaders, well, then these leaders can be them. They can be uniquely gifted and uniquely bring their unique perspective to the table, but it still fits within your larger vision. Does that make sense? And so really, it's not a question of, well, how do I find more leaders that want to run with me? It's, well, what is the vision that I'm talking about? And is there room for multiple leaders? And if you have a huge vision and there's room for people to be them and be unique and be awesome, you'll attract dozens of them.
You know what? And it's amazing how you said, I have that vision of with recording multiple leaders. And I think that goes to your next, your second suggestion as don't, or no, your third suggestion is don't be discouraged so fast. I have to be patient. I have that vision. I just have to be patient.
Yeah, if you've got that vision, then it's just a matter of time. You know, just time and talking about it. Tell everyone. Talk to people about it. It's so counterintuitive, right? You almost don't want to talk about the vision. You don't want to talk about the future to everyone because then you open yourself up for criticism, or then people are talking about. It's almost like people have this idea. Well, I'm going to sneak attack up on people. You know, like I'm just going to be so successful out of nowhere. And people are going to be blown away, like, whoa, where'd that come from? I can just surprise people with my success. But success should never be a surprise. Like, success is never a surprise. Success is something that is planned and worked for. And if you're not talking about it all the time, well, then how can people know that they want to be a part of what you're doing? And so if you've got that vision, that's fantastic. And just talk about it all the time. Talk about it, you know, where you're going and what you're doing, what you're kind of trying to accomplish. The vision for what you're doing, or vision for the city, or vision for your program, and then it's just a matter of time. It's a matter of time.
Yes, and you're absolutely right about getting the criticism by talking about it. And I think the biggest criticism that I get is, "Oh, well, you're an engineer. You went to school for 9 years." I said, "Yeah, I'm still using the degree, but I'm not using it the way that people talk about it." But anyways. But yeah, that's a long topic. I really appreciate your suggestions about that. But you make a good point. I mean, you need to talk about it, or else someone's not going to know what you're talking about. And you just need to build a thick skin and expect that criticism along the way. And you filter out those people, and you maybe find those leaders that want to share that vision with you.
For sure. Okay, so getting into the last part of the talk here, because we're just actually after the hour. So going right into the rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's rock and roll.
All right. So what are three things you'd want people to remember you by after hearing from you today?
Number one, you don't find a life of passion. You create one. So just take it one step at a time and do the best with what you got. Number two, have a vision for what you're trying to accomplish. Decisions are not good and bad by themselves. Decisions are good or bad depending on how they are tied into your goal or dream. So always attach your decisions, no matter what you're doing, no matter how big or small the decisions are, attach your decisions to a dream. Attach your decisions to your goals, and that'll always give you a little bit of perspective on whether or not you're making some of the right choices and decisions. Last thing, just be flexible. Adapt to change really well. Things are changing so fast, and that's what I love. I love it. I'm excited about it. But even just things like, you know, 10 years ago, Facebook didn't even exist. And now 10 years later, Facebook is for old people, you know, and it's just things are changing all the time. I mean, what used to take, you know, 10, 20, 30 years for things to come and gain traction and then become old. I mean, that stuff is happening in years now, and it's happening in months, what used to take years. And so being able to change and adapt and not get so hung up on titles or positions, like Layla is a great example of it. You know, the things that you're doing right now, do it as well as humanly possible, kill what's in front of you, learn everything that you can, but then really you're taking those intangibles, you're taking the experiences, you're taking the lessons, and you're taking that with you into the next pivot in your life. And so kill what's in front of you and be able to pivot well.
Nice.
Well said. Thanks.
Next question is, 3 favorite teachers, experts, or influencers that have shaped who you are and how you think about things.
Number one, personally, is Jesus. I'm 33 right now. He was 33. He developed he accomplished a lot of things in 33 years that I was trying to do my best to accomplish as much. Totally is not going to happen, but yeah, just the amount of just grace and grace and vision and the servant leader that he was is first and foremost always my kind of go-to advice and mentorship is number one. Number two, a guy named Larry Winters. Larry is a pretty phenomenal human being. He's just one of these great American success stories. He was a $6 an hour car wash manager once upon a time, and it grew himself into an amazing leader, unbelievable, humble servant to people, and a multi-millionaire in the process as well. But just watching his example, again, of servant leadership and humility and passion has been pretty extraordinary. And probably last is my wife. My wife is unbelievable. No joke. She is the most empathetic, however you say it. She's the most caring and heartfelt human being on the planet. And sometimes I have to remind myself to like have a feeling every once in a while. You know, I tell my wife all the time, I'm like, I had a feeling once and then I married you because of it. And that's great. And if anything changes, I'll let you know. But she's got such an amazing heart for people. And she just genuinely sees the best in everyone. And it's something that, especially since I'm so project oriented and just trying to make things happen all the time, just taking the time to uniquely appreciate people for who they are and where they're at in their journey is something I've definitely learned from my wife.
Cool. Next question is, what does success mean to you and how do you achieve it personally?
I think that's something we talked about a little bit earlier. I think everyone's got kind of a unique set of things that they are bringing to the table in this world. They've got gifts and talents and abilities that, and a perspective and people they care about and organizations they care about and missions that they care about that no one else will have. And there's things that even my kid sister cares about that it's not even really on my radar, but she cares and feels very deeply for it. And so I think people owe it to the rest of the world. You owe it to the world to really develop yourself into the best version of you you got. And that takes work and that takes discipline. That takes making some choices that might not always be fun or easy. But when you look back 15, 20 years from now, and you've accomplished a lot of things that you wanted to accomplish, you've benefited and you've served a lot of people, you're going to be really happy that you did. And again, I'm not Old Man River here or anything, but we've just gotten a chance to see how it plays out when you spend your 20s working on yourself and trying to give as much as possible versus when people spend their 20s trying to entertain themselves as much as possible and you know, just I got all the time in the world, so I'm just going to relax and take it easy. And they're not pushing themselves. They're not growing themselves. They're not challenging themselves. We've seen how it's played out, and the people that are the happiest and most fulfilled with the things they've accomplished are the ones that worked on themselves and gave the most.
Nice. So the last question is, where can people go or what can they do in order to do more passion-filled work?
I think that listening to The Angles of Latitude is a great way to do it. The podcasts I've heard have been pretty exceptional, and there's no shortage of great people in our generation that want to accomplish amazing things. So just stay knit with them, stay close with them, actively seek them out. Don't buy the lie and don't get duped by, well, your 20s is just when you're supposed to relax and do nothing and be irresponsible. No, your 20s is when you lay the foundation for your 30s. And your 30s then is the foundation for your 40s. And so if you really want to be accomplishing amazing, life-changing, world-changing things by the time you're in your 40s and your 50s, well, that really means that you better have done something pretty awesome in your 30s, which means that today matters. So really make sure that you're surrounding yourself and growing yourself as much as possible. For myself, if you want to learn more about us and the things we've been doing, you can go to my About Me page, which is Mark Nathan, M-A-R-K, Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, marknathan.me. And actually, we're going to open up a little bit of the book on the resource page attached to this podcast as well through The Angles of Latitude. So,
all right. Sounds good. Well, Mark, I think we definitely appreciated having you on today. And yeah, it's been a total pleasure.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for having me on. JC, Layla, pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Man, what a great talk and very inspirational. You can tell that Mark just loves life and he's worked really, really hard to get where he's at. What a drive. You know, from this talk, even though I've heard the story a couple of times, I had no idea about how he started from the film festival. You know, it makes sense why he was able to do so well with later scaling his business. Just goes to show you that anything you've learned in the past, you can always apply in the future. I look forward to the success he has with his book and getting more into the mainstream thought leader realm, and hopefully I can help him with that. Those of us who have known him for a while now, we need to share him with the rest of the world, and I hope he has success. Per usual, you can find the show notes for this entire session at newinceptions.com/session23, where you'll be able to subscribe for free to this podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Show note extras for the show include resources from Mark that I think you'll get you pepped up a little bit. The first resource is two hand-picked segments from the book that I imagine he and his co-author David would believe are things that we should remember from time to time, especially if we haven't learned it already. The first segment is the second delusion of passion, which Mark wrote about. Specifically, the second delusion discusses how there is pain when you're working with your passion, and if there isn't pain, then, well, maybe it's not really a passion now, is it? Just because you find what you like to do doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be an easy road. Think of all the professional sports players who have had to put in the time to hone their sport. You know, Michael Jordan. He was horrible at basketball when he first started. And then think of all of the free throws that later Larry Bird had to do when, you know, he was getting good. And I can imagine that, you know, a lot of today's sports players are very similar as well. But whatever path you choose, yeah, you'll have to do the same thing. Or as the saying that many of us millennials have grown up with, and it applies more than just going to the weight room, no pain, no gain. The second segment is written by David, and he speaks about the first way to create a life of passion, which he calls resolving and refusing. And what this section talks about is that creating a life of passion is all about determining what you actually want to achieve and then figuring out what you want to leave behind to get there. In this segment, he talks about how he made the decision to work in the White House and then later how he just actually accomplish that. Next on the list are a couple of videos that I want to share from Mark's vault of vids as he's made them over the years, including a couple from his series Live Young and Free. His first video is called Tip Number One, which he talks about how it's important to know what you want from life. The next is a tip from his wife, Meredith, where she talks about the law of resistance.
And finally is a video of his brother on Family Feud being asked by Steve Harvey about his name, the Break Dancing Priest. So definitely some videos you want to check out. Again, if you want to know more about anything you heard about on the show, feel free to email us at heyguys@newinceptions.com. And that's pretty much it for the extras. Coming up in next week's show, I talk with another millennial who's doing pretty well for himself and, like Mark, is teaching others to do the same. He has over 50,000 students on Udemy and is full of knowledge when it comes to building courses and hosting them on there. And he also knows a thing or two about drop shipping and how to use that as an avenue for income as well. His name is Matt Bernstein, and I recently got the chance to know him a little through Pat Flynn's Will It Fly book launch group. And in the chat with Matt, we would talk about how he becomes a solopreneur, how he got into dropshipping, and why he got into doing courses on Udemy, and some of the experience he's actually had with that. I think that if you're going into e-commerce as an income platform or thinking about making a series of online courses, then you'll definitely get a few tidbits of good information from the chat with Matt. So tune in for that one coming up next week. Until then, head on over to the show notes found at newinceptions.com/session23. Again, there's where you'll find the show notes to all that we discussed today. Remember, we really appreciate you guys for listening and sharing our show. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be able to impact all the people we help out there, get out of their comfort boxes and go out, you know, impacting in the world. And that's a meaningful way to them. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on whichever platform you're using. Means a lot, not only to us, but our guests and future listeners of the show. You know, because without few reviews and comments, it's harder for them to actually find the show. So that's pretty much a wrap. Session 23 is winding down. If you've been thinking about starting a passion-based business, I hope that Mark has inspired you to get moving. I mean, you only have one life to live. Get on it. You know, make it count. Get on over to the show notes and grab yourself the free segments from the book. And if you like what you read, go order the rest of it from Mark. And that's pretty much it. Go on out there and do something meaningful. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go. At facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.